Hello and welcome back to Millennial 2021 for what will be the final stream of this, the 16th night. I'm now here with Happy Perspective, who has kindly covered for Milo, who had to cancel. So I'm going to try to reschedule Milo. He's offered to do a New Year's Eve, but I wasn't planning to do a stream on New Year's Eve, so I'm not sure. But okay, let's... So, welcome back, Happy Perspective.
Happy to be here.
Okay, thank you. And you were on last year. That was a nice stream. I think people will be familiar with you. You're on Telegram and on and YouTube and Odyssey. I think you're on Gab as well.
I am on there. I'm not as active. I often just share Antidem's posts because I really like them.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes,
him and good. I have a lot in common as far as a certain issue.
Right. Yeah, well, he's a good guy. I've known him for years. I think he was on my channel back in 2014.
Yeah.
Or definitely 2015, and I met him
during
2016. It was he's a really nice guy. And you know, it sort of saddens me that I don't see so much of him now because he's not making videos and I'm not on Gab very often. I mean, I try to check out it like once a day, but it's just not as social as Twitter. So I don't see as much of him. But anyway, so you wanted to talk about the, among other topics, the future of entertainment and virtual reality. Now, just before we I turn the mic over to you, as it were, I will say virtual reality is something that I've long had a fascination with, even though I did actually try it once in 1996 when I was in America. We went to some theme park and they had this VR headset and I did try it. But I mean, you can imagine it wasn't nearly as sophisticated then as it is now. But that's the only time. And at that point, it was all Johnny Mnemonic, The Lawnmower Man. That's probably it, actually. I'm sure there were others like Hackers. I'm sure they used it in that as well. Now it's taken on a whole new thing. So, Happy Perspective, please take it away. Virtual reality.
Sure. So, a family member of mine purchased a VR headset out of nowhere, and I mean, like yourself, I tried on a VR headset back in the 90s at, like, I think it was a theme park or something, and it was nothing, you know. But this is something completely different. This family member of mine got the Oculus Quest 2, and to put it concisely, you know, in simple terms, I mean, I don't want to say that like I actually feel this way, but I could definitely see people getting into the pod if they have this thing on their face and like being happy and owning nothing. Like it is that addictive and immersive. It's incredible.
So how sophisticated is it at this point? Did you tried it yourself?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
And what's it like?
It is trying to find the right words to describe this. It is like, you know, like when you go to the movie theater and if it's like a long movie, when the movie's over and you walk out of the theater, you still feel like you're inside the movie. Have you ever had that experience?
Oh, yes.
That's what it's like times like 10 or 50 or whatever. It's incredible. But one of the things I felt happening, and this is something I'm concerned about, is that when you have these headsets on, even for like half an hour or 10 minutes, the surrealness of the virtual reality starts to wear off. And then when you take off the headset, real reality starts to seem surreal. It's sort of like you've been disconnected from it and you're coming back into it. You know, the virtual world starts to feel more real than the real world.
There must be a sense of disorientation, dizziness.
When you take off the headset. Yeah.
And how realistic are the graphics?
it's pretty much there. Some of the games, I mean, I'm picking up items, and it's like I'm actually picking them up, and it just feels real. It doesn't feel like you're in a video game world in some of these games. Yeah. And I think we're less than, you know, like one console I'm calling it a console, you know, like the next VR headset, you know, 5 years from now or 10 years from now, you know, definitely within 10 years is going to be photorealist or beyond. It's going to be real.
I mean, one of the things about graphics getting better and better is that I have nostalgia for when they were not very good, like the Sega Genesis. I mean, that's my sort of thing. I think I was 10, that sort of age, when that was all the rage. That's the Sega Genesis. It was called the Mega Drive over here. And then, and even before that, the sort of Tron era, cool, very early CGI. And then after that, the mid-90s, where you've got, you know, stuff like Johnny Mnemonic. It's and the Lawnmower Man, you know, that's nostalgia CGI, which gets completely wiped away because the graphics are just, you know, as you said, photorealistic, and that's obviously what things are going to drive towards. So you're going to lose these aesthetics that emerged because of the deficiencies of the technology at the time.
You know, I actually tried a couple of days ago. I was looking for a John Wick film, and I came across Johnny Mnemonic, and I had never seen it before. I tried watching it. I was like, oh my God, this, I'm sorry if you like it, but I just thought it was insanely, like, it was like cringe cheesy.
What do you mean? Like the graphics or what?
Not the the graphics, the just the characters. I think what, like Ice-T was in it.
It's nonsense. It's absolute nonsense. I mean, it was regarded at the time as just a shitty film. That's why it flopped. Flopped more than that dolphin. I think that is the one with the dolphin at the end, actually. Let me just check that before we get back onto the... I mean, it was sort of... It's weird because it was Keanu... it was before Speed. It was before The Matrix. It was during that... I think he'd just done Speed, so he was just like a superstar. And then he did that film for some reason, which was fairly low budget. And then he sort of disappeared for a few years and then came back with The Matrix. There was a strange lull in his career where he didn't do any, you know, big films between Speed and The Matrix. But anyway, it doesn't matter.
He must have been embarrassed after that film.
I think everyone was. But it's there is that cool sequence where maybe you don't get a thrill from it. I do get a thrill from that sort of cyberpunk early technology. The graphics, but also the equipment, the aesthetics. It's the same in Strange Days, actually, which I guess is virtual. Well, it's not really virtual reality, but anyway, similar stuff. It's this, and I think James Cameron gets off on this kind of thing where it's like a hacker's hideout with cables everywhere and, you know, flickering CRT screens and all that. It's fun. But anyway, we're getting off topic.
Yeah, we are. Yeah. Hacker's hideout. Could you imagine that now?
No, completely different. I mean, so yeah, okay, so the future of internet, I mean, it does seem to me, and I remember writing this is actually part of the thesis that I wrote at art college, which I'll be doing a reading of next year, that virtual reality was a huge thing in that thesis. And
oh, really?
Because, yeah, it was the virtual reality, psychedelic drugs, and the internet, and what people, various people imagined at that time, 2004, would be the future of the internet. The predictions have not really been borne out. So virtual reality was a big thing, and I did assume that's where that's going to be the future of entertainment, where it's completely immersive. And because why wouldn't you do it that way? Why wouldn't you do it in 3D, so that the person could actually not only be immersed in the environment, but even walk around at will inside it and explore it. It just, it's obvious. And so I can understand why video games have taken over, have sort of taken the place of films, of movies, because there's so much more flexibility with them.
I have a lot to say about that. That is really a big thing, because a lot of people in our spheres lament the lack of culture and as far as like music and movies, and they say that there's like nothing going on, you know, culturally. But I you know, my take on that is more nuanced. I disagree. It's definitely being replaced by video games and interactive entertainment. And that is just exploding. We haven't even reached the golden age of interactive entertainment and video games, you know, with VR. VR is like in its infancy. So that is really what's taking over. And someone in the chat asked about the metaverse, and I'm going to get to that real soon.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? I mean, VR is obviously going to enable the metaverse.
So one of the things I realized with this VR headset is the ruling class, the people that are in charge in Silicon Valley, you know, Mark Zuckerberg, are going to use this technology to really, they're not going to make the same mistakes they made with YouTube and, you know, Facebook and Twitter. They're really trying to control content. So you have to have a Facebook account to, for example, to use the Oculus Quest 2, the standalone VR headset. And that's what most people are going to get, because they don't have a big expensive gaming computer, but they can get this VR headset for less than $300. It's a steal. And I think it's going to get a lot cheaper, because I think the ruling technocratic elite want us to have VR headsets on our face. And in order to access these apps, you'll have to have some sort of Facebook account. And like the iPhone Apple Store, it'll be heavily regulated what you can and can't have in the metaverse or in the virtual reality store or whatever. And so when I put on this VR headset for the first time, and I clicked on the App Store to see what games were available, the first app that I saw, and I shit you not, it was this like 3D exploration game of the Anne Frank House.
Oh, for God's sake.
Yeah.
Right. was Keanu there?
Yeah. It was just like, it was that, and, you know, all these games like World War II, fight the Nazis, those are the bad guys, shoot them, you know, stuff like that. And there's not that many games out yet, because it's still new, but I can just see there's going to be this huge wave of games coming out, and there's going to be a lot of options for people. It's going to be tightly regulated, but the content is going to be the huge driving force, as well as these cheap headsets, you know, on everybody's face. And it's going to be hard to avoid it. I mean, everybody's going to have a VR headset on. They're like, it's going to be very difficult. I mean, like, we all use cell phones, right? Those are just everywhere.
Yeah. And, you know, modern high technology is ridiculously cheap. I mean, I can't even think of examples off the top of my head now that I've said that. But now and then I see something and I think, you know, that would have been really difficult and expensive to make 20 years ago. And now, like, I don't know, I can't think of examples now. But technology just seems to proliferate. It seems to be everywhere. So that something that would have been expensive is easily available now. In all sorts of like digital cameras, whatever, smartphone, etc. And I would imagine it'll be exactly the same with them. Well, actually, I can think of one example. It would be like credit card readers, that you get these tiny wee scanners that they'll use in some shop, and it's like the size of a two wee matchboxes side by side. And that's pretty sophisticated technology when you think about it. But they're everywhere. They're just everywhere. It probably costs nothing, really.
Well, even if the technology is fairly pricey to produce. I think that the powers in Silicon Valley and these corporations are willing to eat the cost of producing these devices and marking them down, because the money, they know the money is going to come from the apps. So they're you know, I mean, once there's more, as more apps come out for these devices, kind of like with cell phones, they're going to get just cheaper and cheaper, certainly more affordable, and they're just going to be everywhere.
Yeah. I guess, you see, one point I was going to make about video games taking over from films is that you go from a story with, and I know that video games nowadays are very, they're not, I mean, it's not Super Mario 3 from 1990 or whatever. They do have characters voiced by real actors. They have orchestral soundtracks. The graphics are incredibly good, lighting, camera work, and set design, and all this. I mean, I know that when they did that Aliens, I think it was Colonial Marines video game, they actually got the production designer from the film Aliens, Sid Mead, to design more of the ship that you see in that film, because it features in the game, and you go to all these different areas of it that weren't in the film. So they needed to design those rooms. So they got the original designer back to do that. And probably, I mean, that would have cost a lot of money to employ him to do that. So there's obviously a huge amount of effort that goes into any like major video game nowadays. I imagine that the games that I played as a kid, it was probably a team of like 10 or 15 people who made each one, whereas now it'll be a crew of hundreds of people responsible for each one. And they also have narrative, they have themes. So it's not, I mean, it's not empty, but at the same time, it's not a story in the sense of a narrative that begins at the start of the film and is wrapped up at the end of the film. What would you say about that?
Well, you know, you have a background in programming, so you can kind of like you're really good at guessing, or you know, someone that like yourself that understands programming can guess how much work is involved in making some of these video games. And certainly, as video games become more graphically intense and more involved, it's inevitable that it's going to become more and more. I mean, it already is a corporate venture, you know, to make these apps. You have these large like video game developers and publishers making these games, and you're going to see more woke crap in interactive content. American Krogan talks about it all the time. And that's one of the reasons why one of many reasons why I avoid like story driven games, or, you know, games with like a set narrative and there's a story. I tend to, when I do play video games and I have time to play them, I like sandbox type games or, you know, multiplayer. But yeah, that's the thing, is that as more and more people, as it takes more, as these video games become more expensive to produce, to write, to code, there's going to be more people involved in making them. So that, you know, you're going to have, at the very least, they're going to appeal more to a lower common denominator in terms of the story and other aspects of the video games, as well as being more products of a corporate of these corporations or corporate culture. Yeah.
I can see this with big budget films, where like these fucking Marvel films, where there doesn't seem to be any depth whatsoever. The characters are nothing. It's just a walking gimmick. The storylines are some very, very simplistic thing about good versus evil, but no depth at all. And you know, I can see that being the result of cultivating a market where everything has to cost a fortune to make. Therefore, it has to appeal to as many people as possible. And in order to appeal to as many people as possible, it has to be expensive to make. So it's a race to the top, well, as it were, where you're spending ever more money to appeal to ever more people by making the thing as, you know, bland as possible.
Well, you know, there's a financial parallel with the movie industry, because what we're starting to see is that just because you like there's big budget video games, just like there's big budget movies, you know, they call them like AAA titles. And of course they have the best graphics and the best voice acting and, you know, so on and so forth. But that doesn't mean they're well received by audiences and they still get bad reviews. And, you know, you also have these like small indie games that come out that are made by a handful of like a group of guys that are developing a game. And they get positive reviews and they're at the top of the App Store. And you see this all the time on Steam. There's some really good indie games that come out, and the tools to make some of these games that have really good graphics are becoming more and more accessible and affordable. So it'll just be interesting to see how things unfold, because there seems to be this competition between like indie game developers and these big corporate game developers. And, you know, right now it seems like with VR, I guess there's a barrier to entry. I don't know what it's like to make a virtual reality game, but I know that there are a couple of popular games that were made by a really small team and they outperformed some of the games made by larger teams. But those games, they don't, you know, they're not narrative driven. But, you know, a lot of people, most people today that play video games don't play for the narrative anyway. They're just want a fun game that has like good multiplayer or good single player. And it's like a sandbox type game. And you know, that's where the indie developers do really well. And
I think it's, I mean, clearly if you come up with a good idea for a game, it's like, you know, in drama, if you come up with a good idea for characters, you don't really need a good storyline, because you can get away with just the great characters. People don't even notice I mean, obviously Withnell and I would be the go-to example for this in my own, you know, experience. and I think with a game, well, at least in my experience, which is, you know, antiquated at this point, the graphics weren't as important as, is it a good game? So something like Lemmings, which I wouldn't be surprised if most of our listeners haven't even heard of it. Lemmings was an astonishingly good idea for a game. And the graphics don't really matter. I mean, they do have a charm to them now, looking back, you know, nostalgically. But it's the gameplay, how engrossing it was, that certainly kept me going back to it. And I would imagine it's similar with video games today, in that if you have, well, you tell me.
You know, this is sort of like an ongoing debate in the video game world. You know, what matters, gameplay or graphics? And the obvious answer is like both. And ideally, the best video games get both right. But generally, gameplay matters more than graphics. But with better graphics, the game, it can enhance the gameplay, you know, going from like a 2D environment to a 3D environment, sometimes, not always. So it really depends. A game is not always going to be better if it has better graphics, but sometimes it can really, sometimes it can enhance the gameplay. Sometimes it doesn't, you know, if the developers screw up the gameplay, then it doesn't matter how good the graphics are. It's, I'd have to think of an analogy for like movies, you know, like a great story, but bad actors, or good actors and a shit story, right?
Yeah, I can imagine. So, I mean, let's get to this issue of VR being the future of entertainment. How do you think that will manifest? And do you think it's a good thing, a bad thing, or what?
Well, it's like in retrospect saying, like, cell phones, have they been a good thing or a bad thing? You know, Instagram, TikTok, Tumblr, if you want to go back further. That was more the internet, but I guess people access that on their cell phones. So basically, like, you know, the selfie culture, right? Yeah, it's like, I think, like, video games are fine in moderation. I'm not against video games or VR. I mean, my concern though is like you see the bug men of today getting excited over a Nintendo Switch, like these grown men with their mouths open.
It's just tragic.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you could show me a new Lemmings game that's just as great as the thing I played when I was 10, with just as endearing graphics, and I wouldn't make that fucking face. Yeah, you know, I'd be happy about it, but you know, I'm not going to do that. There's something really disgusting and degraded about, well, I mean, that you know, the Bugman, this awful archetype.
Yeah, and it's a fitting one for what's going on with a lot of men today. And I don't just blame video games for that, but video games kind of is like an additional facilitator of that phenomenon, right? There's other things going on. There's other factors to that. It isn't just video games, but like, or you know, and it's also a symptom. Like, these guys don't have anything else going on in their life that could give them an identity, you know, certainly a masculine identity. So they're glued to these video games, and the video games become a part of their identity. And it's just, it's a self-fulfilling kind of prophecy at that point. And some of these guys will play video games for hours a day, 8 hours a day. And I can just see with virtual reality that a lot of people are just going to live in VR worlds. And
I mean, yeah. I remember one time we doing a hangout, must have been in 2015. It was the old, you know, Google Hangouts thing, which was really fun at the time. And there was this guy on, and he said that he had calculated all the hours that he'd spent playing. I think it was a particular game, and it was like thousands of hours throughout the year. And, you know, he was trying to rationalize it as that this was good because he'd learned skills in the game. And someone else was pointing out, being a bit more ruthless with him than I would have been. But this other guy was pointing out, like, you know, in that time, you could have learned a language. You could have learned to play piano. You could have learned a fucking musical instrument in the time that you've been playing this game. And now you're bored of the game, so it's out of your life, and you don't have any enduring... It hasn't enriched you. It hasn't given you something to take forward into the future with you. Whereas if you'd spent that time learning a skill, you'd have had that for the rest of your life.
Well, let me give you the counter argument to that. You know, I think people are going to see this video game culture and VR as like becoming our culture. Like, this is our culture. Oh, this VR game. This is what we do here. And, you know, they're going to look at it the same way that our parents might look at, you know, becoming good at chess or something. Like, oh, you know, that's a part of our culture. You know, that's your, because it's like, it's interesting how, you know, some parents will like look at video games as a waste of time, but, oh, if you get good at chess, if you spend your time playing that, that's okay. But that's, you know, also a game. It's just not a video game. It's like, you know, it's on a board, right? You have a chess board, and that's something that's more
transferable. Inclined. Yeah. I mean, that's something that you could take outside of the game. If you learn to play chess like that, I can understand that.
Well, at that point, then it's just a debate between doing something in real reality versus a virtual world. And
which I guess yeah. Brings us to the metaverse.
Right.
So, I mean, you know, there is that famous, and again, it's one of these things that actually predates COVID and all this. There's that photo of Mark Zuckerberg striding through an auditorium, and on either side of him are like, all of the people are seated, and every one of them has a VR headset on. Do you know the photo?
I've seen the photo.
Yeah, it was a famous one. It was shared around because it's interesting, actually, because it predates not only COVID but also the announcement of the metaverse. I mean, I'll see if I can find it now and put it up on screen, because let me see. But it was, yeah, there it is. Yeah. And I think that, when was this? Forbes. It was actually, right, okay. I'm gonna put this up. Hold on a second. Because it's worth noting, because we tend to lose track of these things. Hold on a second. There it is. That is from 2016. Now, you know, and 5 years later, we've got the announcement of the metaverse.
That smile Mark Zuckerberg has doesn't look right.
It's more human than some smiles I've seen him do.
Yeah, it's like a sinister smile, like, we got you.
Yeah, I mean, he's a very strange guy. I mean, that, I mean, we don't need to talk about his weird appearance and whatever.
Everybody knows.
I mean, that hairline there, you know, it looks like, you know, really, I mean, if he had just stepped off an Android production line, who would be surprised? Like, but anyway, okay. So this is the point. That's from 5 years ago now, and now they're talking about a global. So this version of him was already there. It was already something that people were aware of and sort of fearful of. That this guy who was behind the hugest social media platform in the world and is constantly sucking metadata about people into his hard drives and, you know, into his database, watching us all the time, gathering info and keeping us hooked on this drug, this platform. But then the next stage is going to be this. It's going to be VR. And, you know, that image, that notion of him as a sort of a billionaire whiz kid, but not really human, megalomaniac, was there then, and I think now it's sort of coming to fruition. I mean, what do you imagine about, you know, the metaverse? I know it's both virtual reality and augmented reality, and that concept. I remember Terence McKenna talking about augmented reality in the late 90s. So it was obviously it's not that new. You know, there's always been this awareness that people would actually want to integrate virtual reality into their everyday lives. It wouldn't be that they were totally immersed in that. There would also be, it would interact with the real world in various ways. So, what are your thoughts on all of this?
The metaverse thing, the Facebook, like, approach to the metaverse might flop, but VR, you know, in 2021 and onward, it's like, you know, this technology, I think, is finally in a place where it'll be really pervasive. It's going to be everywhere. You know, it's not this like fun, expensive thing now. It's going to be cheap. It's going to be everywhere. Everyone's going to have one, just like they have a cell phone. It might replace a cell phone. Your computer, your television, and your cell phone will be replaced by one of these headsets, and it'll be cheaper than any one of those things. The technology is definitely going to be more affordable. They can eat the hardware costs, and I think the government is going to subsidize this stuff because given everything else we've seen, it really seems like to me they want people in the pods. So this is going to be part of the whole smart city thing, you know, and getting people into pods. People, if you have these pods, the people are going to be on UBI or whatever, and they're going to have these VR headsets on, and they're not going to want to leave the pod. They won't know how to leave the pod. As soon as they open the pod and like actual sunlight hits them, it's going to burn them or something. it's really, that's where I see things going. I mean, maybe I'm, being hyperbolic, but I could see myself getting really sucked into it, and that's my concern. Is that,
well, you know, yeah. Again, lockdown seems to have been a sort of prototype for this. I remember there was a meme. I'll see if I can find it now, but I probably can't. But it was like the meme was someone sort of like a vampire afraid of sunlight, and it was saying me collecting a parcel, Amazon parcel, during lockdown, and like going to his front door and opening it up, and the sunlight comes streaming in, and he's not used to it. I mean, that's I really wonder how much the lockdowns are going to turn out to be a sort of dresser, like getting people accustomed to the idea of just being at home, online, all the time. Because, and you know, it was for decades they talked about this, you know, working from home, because we've got the internet, or there will be a thing called the internet in the future. We don't know what it will be called, but we'll all be connected. It goes back, I think, to the 70s, maybe even earlier, the concept. But it finally became a thing, I guess, in the 2000s, if not, then definitely the 2010s. And then in 2020, it became a, inverted commas, necessity for many people to do that. And I think that, on the one hand, it's unhealthy and all that, for sure, but at the same time, people obviously they sort of want it. The working from home, being a hermit. It's not just, you know, people make jokes about me living like that. And I a lot of the time I do, because I am naturally introverted and whatever. But it's becoming the norm. I mean, it's becoming far more common. And I think people... It's like, I remember people saying about the automated checkouts at supermarkets. You'd get, I would always be surprised to hear someone who seemed well adjusted, you know, normal, fine, saying, oh yes, you always end up using the automated checkout so that you don't have to have an awkward conversation with the checkout girl.
Oh, geez.
I mean, like, it's a way to avoid awkward social interactions. And like people that I thought were just wouldn't have had that attitude, they increasingly had that attitude. So that this sort of alienation from each other has been on the way for years and years now.
And if I might interject just here, people wonder why there's an incel problem. All right, sorry, continue.
Well, indeed. And so, yeah, that was really the point. I mean, when we talk about the pod, obviously it's awful, but at the same time, so many of the cultural trends, or maybe even deeper than that, just the ways of being, the ways of living, that have emerged over the last 100 years or so, that detaching us from communities, detaching us from local culture. I mean, this is a serious, like really profound problem, I think. Like that we don't know how to socially interact anymore.
I agree. I can understand why people would want to work from home, because, you know, it'd be better to be at home than in a cubicle in some office, or, you know, having to commute to some job. Commutes suck. You know, you're in your car. In the American context, I mean, a lot of people live in commuter towns and they have to commute to the city or the town where they work, and they're in their car for half an hour just by themselves. And it's like, it's an expense. I mean, working from home seems really practical. But if you think about it this way, like our ancestors before all of this digital technology, a lot of them before like these, you know, moving to cities or working for corporations, a lot of them did work from home. If they didn't work in a factory, you know, they lived on a farm, and they did, you know, work, some sort of work related to producing something, you know, agricultural related or woodworking or whatever, you know, cottage industries. In the American context, I mean, diversity and economic factors have led to, you know, this urban, or rather suburban sprawl in these commuter towns, where people, you know, they don't want to live in the city or near the city, but they drive to the city to work. And that's why Americans like seemingly drive everywhere and everything's spread out. And
Then you've got the nightmare of the commutes, like in Falling Down, where he's in the traffic jam on a boiling hot day, and it's the thing that finally makes him snap.
Exactly. And yeah. And, but you can imagine, like, imagine, I mean, you could see why someone like in his position would prefer, I mean, it would, the idea of working from home in a VR headset, well, that sounds fantastic. And it that is a better option.
Oh God, it's so strange to think that was 30 years ago now. But yeah, of course, I mean, there's a lot that I can imagine people saying, you know, why do I have to go into the workplace to do this job that I could just as easily do from my laptop at home? What's the point? And then, of course, you'll get businesses thinking the same thing. Why are we paying for a business premises and an office when we could just have our staff working from home? And then maybe
in the metaverse, their office is in the metaverse, and they have like a virtual office, and they all get together and have like virtual office parties.
Oh.
In like golfing tournaments and stuff. That's what's going to happen. It's going to be, people are going to have fun. It's actually going to be fun. They're going to enjoy it.
Yeah. Are they actually going to enjoy this?
People are going to enjoy VR. They will be happy. They'll be very happy bug people. Yeah. They will be happy in the pod.
You know, I think that I think a responsible dictator would ban so many things like porn and this kind of stuff. I can imagine a responsible dictator saying, look, we just have to ban automated agriculture, even though it's really efficient and cheap, because it's destroying us as a community. So it's better if we're actually out on the field and laboring, because at least that creates a sense of reality. I mean, it connects people to reality. Whereas if it's just all automated, then the food just appears. They've got no idea. I mean, obviously, I'm not saying that I want to go out, you know, doing farm labor tomorrow. But that's the whole point. That's why the dictator would have to just force this, because no one would do it by choice, even though it might well be the good thing for them to do. I mean, this is the whole problem, that we have all these comforts that nobody wants to give up, but they are bad for us. And you know, virtual reality is obviously going to just bring that to a whole new fucking level.
Exactly. There's never going to be a responsible dictator because, I believe power corrupts, and someone with that kind of power would look at this technology and think, well, actually, this gives me more power, so we're keeping this. And comfort itself is a problem.
Indeed it is. Someone said ban hookup apps. Definitely. I mean, the stuff I hear about, you know, the culture of dating now, it just sounds fucking dreadful. I've gone into it before in other things. I don't need to talk about it now, but a responsible dictator would absolutely ban hookup apps. He'd be forcing people to go to like dances in the town hall or whatever, once a month. And this is the whole thing, you know, like technology has been so incredibly convenient, but so unhealthy for us.
Well, with the dictator question, I see things from the perspective of incentives, and I just don't think that a dictator that wants to keep power, that likes power, which is, you know, which are inevitably the type of people that fall into that position, they're not going to have an incentive to do the right thing if it, you know, potentially threatens their power or reduces it. And, hookup culture benefits, you know, the top 20% of men. Well, of course, you know, that would include the dictator, right? But for the rest of us proletariat, well, we're going to have Tinder in the metaverse, right? You know, virtual dating. You can just imagine how crazy that'll be.
I guess that would be a new type of 3D girl.
Yeah. 3D prostitution. Oh, my God.
Well, yeah. These are issues that are going to have to be worked out over the next, well, hopefully not too long, but the next few decades, the next century. But I suspect that the end result of this will be that we just, you know, put all of this technology in a box and bury it in like under 10 layers of cement.
Yeah, Ted Kaczynski was right. Yeah.
Well, obviously I wouldn't say that, but the point is that the technology, and I say this as someone who loves technology and gets off on I like it, like the old school graphics and all this, synthesizers. But clearly, I guess the question is, can there be a happy medium where we are, like in Star Trek, you know, how Picard uses the replicator, but he also does respect and appreciate the process of making wine the old-fashioned way, even though you could do it with zero effort with the replicator. You know, is there a way to retain a sense of what's the word? Respect, dignity, appreciation of life, even though there is always this option to just automate it all and do it with no effort. That's the thing with Star Trek. This is really one of the utopian aspects of it, that they have the high technology, but they're not possessed by it. They're not degraded by it. They're still able to, you know, light a fire with two sticks kind of thing, even though they've got the tricorder.
Yeah, that's an interesting thing to think about. And I think we can have balance. The Woodlanders said the future, or a healthy future, would be like Amish with lasers or something. And, you know, it could be something like that. Or
maybe the Woodlander with lasers.
Yeah, there you go. Exactly. I like that. you know, that, and I guess, you know, I like working with my hands. You know, I guess we could segue into the next topic, woodworking.
Yeah, that does bring us quite swimmingly into that next topic. Yeah.
And what's interesting to me is, like, you know, technology has come so far that, like, even with woodworking, you're seeing like these like 3D CNC machines that cut metal and wood, and you have a computer, you push some buttons, and you can turn like a sheet of plywood into pretty much anything out of wood. You could just start making furniture without any experience using a chisel or, you know, I mean, it'll instantly just the CNC routing machine will make mortise and tenons and perfectly flatten it, all the boards for you. I've been flattening boards by hand with a hand plane, which is labor intensive. But, you know, we've gone from, I mean, that's how people used to do it back in like the Middle Ages. And then now we're, you know, somebody with a more, that has more money, that has like a modern woodworking shop, has, you know, like a jointer machine or like a planing machine. And now we have CNC machines. So you just plug in, you just type some numbers in a computer and everything is perfect and you just put it together. You know, it's not really woodworking, but it sure is convenient. But I don't know. I would love to have that machine, to be honest. But I also enjoy using hand tools.
Is it like 3D printing? Does it just make the thing to a design?
Yeah, it's like 3D. You're basically 3D printing with wood. Yeah, but it's not. It cuts the wood. Yeah.
Right. Bloody hell. But the thing is, of course, as you say, by using that machine, you're not going to develop skills of your own. So you're not going to have that sense of progress and self-sufficiency and fulfillment.
Well, I actually disagree with that. I think that there will be a sense of fulfillment But it'll be like, you know, you'll have the VR headset on and you'll create something in virtual reality. And then you'll create the design in virtual reality. You'll send it to the CNC machine and then it'll become like, you know, from your virtual headset, it'll manifest into something made out of wood through the CNC machine. That's where I think this is headed. And, you know, people will get a sense of fulfillment from that, but it's like, you know, it's like going from the hand plane and hand tools to, like, in a modern real woodworking shop, you have like these machines that'll flatten boards for you. Flattening a board is pretty involved, but, you know, for the last several decades, you know, people have had these machines that they could just buy that they wouldn't have to level the boards or anything. They can just put a freshly dried piece of wood through these machines and just flatten them in a matter of minutes.
You know, it must have been amazing for people when they first saw that.
Yeah.
You know, I can't think of what it is now, but it reminds me of when I've seen something be done in an automated way. And you think, bloody hell, we've been slaving over this task for so long. And here's this thing that just does it so quickly and cleanly.
Yeah.
You know, it's almost embarrassing because you realize that all the imperfections that come with just being human and doing something humanly. But of course, as someone said, the imperfections are what are important. You know, they kind of make something. And this is what is always lost with improved technology. I mean, I'm old enough to remember when people were saying things like, the compact disc preserves audio in perfect digital quality, whereas the cassette had tape hiss and flutter and various degradations. And of course, vinyl had crackle and could scratch, but the CD was perfect digital quality. Well, yeah, it is, but that's why no one plays CDs anymore. I mean, they're shit.
It's not quite like that with woodwork. I mean, maybe, you know, some people like things made by hand, but when you get into woodworking, like if you're trying to make a board flat, you do want it to be perfectly flat. And you can spend out like a good hour or several hours trying to get a board flat with a hand plane. And you've got to sharpen the blade and do all this stuff. And that's what I'm doing. And sometimes I, you know, have some soreness in my back and I enjoy it, but I would love to have one of these big machines that you're, you know, even like one of those cheap portable, like hand or so one of those cheap portable planers or jointers. I could get one, but I'm saving up for like a big one. But, you know, I mean, that's just technological progress. I don't think it's a bad thing, but how could I put it? Like if you look at woodworking in the past, like if you look at, like for most of human history, sawing wood was a career. Like that's why you have the last name, Sawyer, right? That was someone that would saw wood and that's all they did. That was a career. You just saw wood.
Yeah.
Oh my God. That's the future.
Yeah, I was just sent that on Telegram by someone, so I thought I'd put it up. But sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt your flow.
So maybe that guy's a woodworker and there's like a remote 3D wood CNC machine. And he's like, hey, I'm a woodworker.
Yeah, a woodworking hobo.
He's got his pod and everything, yeah.
That's very strange. And this is what I mean about this high technology being just, obviously I know that this is some freaky occurrence, but it ties into what I was saying about like high technology now being very cheap. I wouldn't be surprised, you know, if 10, 20 years from now, there actually are tramps, hobos who have that and they walk around with one of those things. Fucking hell. I mean, it does feel very Blade Runner-ish. Mm-hmm. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you there. Sorry.
No, you're good. Like I was looking at, as someone that has been doing woodworking now for a year, I'm still a noob at it. I'm still new. But like I look at, some of the things that were made by Europeans in the past and, you know, other cultures. But, you know, like I was looking at a Viking ship and I was just, it's just amazing to me now looking at something like that and the kind of skill that went into that. At first you also, the first thing I realized, I mean, I already knew this, but, you know, when you see the artifacts left behind by ancient Europeans and, you know, they made all of these amazing things without power tools. You realize that like, for example, the depiction of like the Vikings in popular culture and movies and, you know, even documentaries is not quite right. They're like depicted as like cavemen, but really these people were a very cooperative, skilled, people. I mean, you know, just making like a Viking ship probably required the manpower of an entire village or two. And you had like one person just sawing wood day and night, or not one person, like several people. And that was, you know, what they basically did for a living. You can just imagine.
Yeah.
Another person just makes the tools. Another person, like sharpens the hand planes. That's their job, you know. And it was just this like group effort. Whereas now, you can just be one guy and just have all these machines. You know, like I have a giant bandsaw to mill wood, and you know I don't need a group of people sawing wood. I can just put it through this machine and saw the wood myself, right? And that's where, you know, technology is going to allow people, this sort of technology, that it allows one person to do more things, which I think is a good thing, but I also think that this, the elites kind of understand this. I don't know if there's a word to describe this. You know, I just started thinking about this today. Like, well, like we all know the elites have a depopulation agenda, and from their point of view, it makes sense, right? Because of where, you know, the population of the earth in certain areas, and, you know, especially black and brown countries, is just blowing up. And even in the Western countries, there are already a lot of people. And the way they're looking at it is, as technology progresses, people are going to want more things. So we have to put them in VR headsets. We have to put them in the pods. You know, we have to make them sterile, or give them lives that make them sterile. They have to do this. They can't allow them to have... to use this technology, like have a, you know, a futuristic workshop where they can make all sorts of things, because then they'll consume more material to make those things. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, there are too many people and not enough resources.
Yes.
And, you know, I wish I could offer a way to solve this problem, but, you know, we'd be Fed posting.
Right.
I just think that surely there are better ways to... distribute the resources.
I don't agree with the depopulation agenda as it's going now, but at the same time, it is true that a lot of areas of the planet have reached their carrying capacity, especially if we're going to continue with technological process, you know.
Yeah.
That being the case, I want everybody listening to have as many children as they possibly can, because we do need more people like us, you know.
Yeah, I mean, obviously I'm joking, but it is a serious problem, because I don't know, and this is what I was saying in one of the Gram episodes of a month or 2 months ago, that I can understand them if they are like the elites, if they are actually... See, the thing is, I don't believe that they are well-intentioned. I don't believe that they are benign. But I could understand a benign elite thinking, we do need fewer people. There have to be fewer people in the future than there are now, because there just aren't the resources. Now, obviously, you would want to choose the people who were most productive and whatever to... proliferate and, you know, keep their numbers up, and that would be the sensible thing to do if you were looking at it in from a utilitarian point of view, which I think the elites tend to do. But either way, it's I could imagine this is the trouble with it all, you know. I can imagine there being not humanitarian but practical reason for them wanting to reduce the human population. And, you know, as the global elite, just, you know, taking that term, you know, impartially, it is their job to make these sorts of decisions, because the masses aren't going to do it for themselves. You know, and you're, this is the thing with hierarchy, authority. The trouble with for us is that we just don't like the hierarchy. We just don't like the authority that is in power just now. But it's not the it's not the use of authority itself that offends us, I don't think. But yeah, I mean, they are doing something, and you know, if, because I can imagine the ADL or whatever saying that there needs to be depopulation. But Bill Gates is saying that there needs to be depopulation. You know, these elites are saying it. It's a thing now. It's in the discourse. It has been for years, actually. But you know, we've only become aware of it in the last 2 years.
That's right. Well, I mean, they've been talking about it openly for a very long time. I posted something on Telegram. It was a book from the 70s about a technological future with surveillance. And I haven't read the book yet. I found the audio version. But anyway, yeah, I think it's just inevitable that they're going to use... This ties back to virtual reality. they're going to use VR. They're going to use virtual reality to try to solve these problems, in that they're going to try to get a VR headset or a VR headset on everyone's head and replace people's access to real resources with virtual resources to reduce everyone's consumption, to keep them in the pod, to, you know, lull them into this docile existence where, you know, they're passive and they're just living in virtual reality. And, you know, so they don't have to worry about, I mean, because if you're in a virtual world, you're consuming virtual resources and you're consuming fewer real resources, you know. So that's another reason why I think it's important for our people to get into like real trades, making things, you know, working with wood or metal. And, you know, because one thing that I started thinking is that, like, things that are made out of real resources. It's funny that I have to say it that way. are going to, I think, in the future, like, things actually made out of like wood or metal are going to command a premium price, because, you know, for the average person, most of their resources are going to be virtual. Like what you see with what Mark Zuckerberg is trying to do with the metaverse right now, and I think this is completely ridiculous, but someday this might be the norm. He's trying to sell virtual real estate, so someone can buy a house in VR and they actually, you know, spend cryptocurrency to buy it or something. And, you know, people will buy things in virtual reality, and most of their possessions will be in the virtual world. So, you know, these elites they're not joking when they say you'll own nothing and you'll be happy. But what they're really trying to say is most of what you own will be virtual, so that like things that are real, that are tangible in the real world, I imagine are going to be harder to come by, and they're going to be more expensive because the majority of the world is going to be in the metaverse.
I just can't imagine that being as fulfilling for people. I just cannot. I mean, maybe I'm an old fart and I just don't get it. And this is modern.
Well, it's subjective. Yeah.
I mean, how on earth?
It'll be fulfilling for them.
So they would have completely different priorities. I mean, it wouldn't even occur to them that the real world is more meaningful. And therefore, if something happens in the real world, that's more significant. I guess, because I can imagine... Well, I can remember when people used to say, oh, that's a Skype friend, but you've never actually met him, so it's not a real friend. And, you know, for our generation, it was like, no, he is a real friend. Like, I know all about his life and he knows all about mine. And, you know, it's a real friendship. But yeah, sure, we've never met, but we are real friends. So maybe it would be similar with the metaverse, where you'd get a young person saying, yeah, all right. So I don't own this house in the real world, but I own it in the metaverse, and that's it's still ownership.
And they'll just think of it as their house.
Yeah.
They won't even make that they won't say, "Oh, I don't own a real house." That will be the real house for them.
Yeah, it's just I just can't imagine this.
They won't discern the difference.
Yeah. This is just so weird to me. So meantime, their real world, I mean, what would be their situation in the real world? Would they just, like in the Matrix, would they be in the, you know, the pod connected with a, you know, a cable plugged into the back of their head to link them to the metaverse?
I think Elon Musk is trying to facilitate that sort of technology, but I think as it stands right now with the current VR technology that I see, like, or what Mark Zuckerberg is trying to do, just with the headset, you know, the goggles and the controller, I think that where that leads to is a sort of pod where, you know, like people will live in a box. It could be a one room box where, you know, they have a bathroom and a sink and just like the you know, not even, you know, but below like what you would consider to be the bare minimum of like a, you know, a small apartment or something. It wouldn't even be like, it'd be a one room kind of smaller than a flat where they would, you know, they'd have a bed and like a, you know, just a fridge full of Soylent or something and, you know, and a bathroom and then, you know, they would live in VR. Yeah. That's right. Where I imagine things going. As far as like Matrix style pods were probably, that's probably like 100 years away.
Okay. All right. Well, on that note, let's end this rather ominous sci-fi themed, stream.
Well, it's not all blackpilling. I mean, you know,
I know. It's just, it's
that's where the normies are going to be, not our people.
Oh well, okay, that's okay then. let them eat cake, virtual cake.
Yeah,
fuck them.
Yeah.
All right. Well, okay. I'm going to have to go to bed because I'm exhausted.
All right.
Okay. So. Half a perspective. Thank you very much for doing this. This has actually been quite an unexpected and surprising stream. I didn't think we'd end up doing one about VR, but it's interesting. And we've gone into various aspects of it, the social, psychological, moral aspects of it. So it's been interesting. All right. Let's end it there. So half a perspective. Thank you for appearing on Millennial 2021.
Happy to be here. It was fun.
Excellent.
I always enjoy it.
I'm glad. All right. I will be back tomorrow night. Let me just see what the... Okay, it's the surprise guest, and then the iconoclast, then Mike Enoch, and then Mr. D. So we'll see how that goes. All right. Okay. Well, I'll see you then. Bye-bye for now.
Millennial Woes has created many things, and this is your chance to own one of them. A unique piece of work handcrafted by the Vile Vlogger to commemorate Millennial 2021. 100 hours of highly skilled labor went into producing this animated vector graphic, which can be magnified to any size. In the iconic Millennial Woes font, it glistens and responds to your touch. And at the center of it all, a figure representative of 2021, the White Stag, symbolizing endurance, discovery, and rejuvenation. This one-of-a-kind creation is up for sale as an NFT. Follow the link below, and it can be yours forever. This is your only chance.